Hey everybody, just before we begin the show this week, I'll take a moment to remind you about our spring survey. You can find it at update.rsbnb.com/survey. It's a survey we do about every year. We use it to gauge where our community's at and where we should take the podcast in the future. We'd greatly appreciate your input. You can find it at update.rsbnb.com/survey, and we'd appreciate you filling it out. Thanks. This week on RSBNB Update, Stroop Waffles, Portable Vic, and Fixes for Charge Bows are here, but once again the debate focuses around the comp cape. Do common questions, multiple perspectives, and intelligent design foreshadow a successful update? This is RSBNB Update, episode 721, recorded Thursday, April 25th, 2019. The Comp Cape Persuasion Game. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Tannis and myself in this week. Welcome back.
Thanks, Shane.
So this week, we had a bit of a discussion in the pre-show about many things, and that's typically things that do happen. Is a Stroop Waffle a main game update? That was one of the points.
Yeah, I would say no. This reminds me of an old commercial we used to have in the U.S. About Wendy's. Where's the beef? Where's the beef? Like, it's... where's the update, Shane? Where's the beef?
Well, the main update this week seems to be that it is, of course, a patch week. And it also marks the 10-year anniversary of the official Dutch RuneScape community when the Dutch game servers came online. That was on April 22nd. And, I had many chats with folks who are Dutch, Sirion, Derp, amongst others, about how to pronounce this word. I said it on the bite, but, I have a feeling that Dutch is one of the hardest languages to speak if you're not a native speaker. This is their way of saying happy birthday to that community. And I'm going to try it once more, and if I butcher it, oh well, and here we go. Gefeliciteerd apparently means happy birthday or congratulations in Dutch. And I don't know how well I did that time, but if anybody out there listening wants to rate the pronunciation, please do. And, happy birthday to that community. Also, celebration of the Dutch Festival of King's Day on April 27th. And to celebrate this, they have added Stroop Waffles into the game, which, I've heard so much about, but I've never actually had the chance of sampling them. And apparently that's because you can't get nearly as authentic or as good-tasting ones in the UK as you can in the Netherlands. So that's why I didn't sample those when I was in the UK. But nonetheless, seven flavors that have been added to the game: banana, caramel, chocolate, cinnamon, coffee, honey, and strawberry. And there's a little achievement if you do manage to eat all seven different flavors of them. It's called I Can't Stop Eating Them. They heal 250 life points. They have a value of 10 constitution. A little fun little thing added into game to celebrate the Dutch community. Talk to Wilhelm in Taverley by the windmill, which of course is incredibly apt. So... did you pick up these waffles and have a bite?
I didn't, just because I didn't even think there was a use for them. Like, I didn't even know they healed, like, for anything.
Yeah,
so,
250, not that much, but there is that achievement. It doesn't give rune score, so it's not something you're going to be missing out on. It's kind of just a token achievement.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, I did kind of passed on it just because, I've just been busy. And sometimes when you log in, you're just you have to just knock some stuff out, and so that's what. Yeah, I didn't get to the Stroop Waffles.
So anybody wondering what exactly these are, if you have a look at them, it's effectively a very thin cookie crust, and then there's a filling inside, and it's crunchy, sweet, and pretty much everything that you would expect of something delicious. So. All right. Well, with that being said, I think we can move on to the actual patch notes of the week and what was headlining. Or no, we should talk about Portable Vic first. I didn't sink any bonds in this, but it's here. No. Did you?
Well, yeah.
Oh, how many did you get?
Well, I got two for the main, but I'm going to pick up some more at the beginning of May. So for right now, I've got two, but I want at least five on both accounts.
Five?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, I don't know. I normally only have enough bonus XP lying around that I can manage with the two times a year that Vic appears. So, I mean, what are you planning on doing with them, and why do you need so many?
Crushing the competitions. Crushing the opposition.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough.
So, I mean, if there's... What I'm planning on is before, you know, trying to gather as much as I can, but then before Double XP weekend, then converting everything to what I'll be working on that weekend. Therefore, you know, giving me a bigger bang for my buck. And then I want to use one to... Don't laugh at me too much here. I know this is going to be blasphemy for a lot of people, but I really don't like to do Dungeoneering, but I really need more tokens.
Oh,
so
hey,
I'm going to use
fine.
One to get tokens. Because I just, once I get the gold accumulator, then I'm done forever with that. And then I don't ever have to worry about it. So that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to do.
You know, I haven't even actually opened Treasure Hunter since the last Double XP weekend. I'm taking a page out of Sirion's book on that. So I don't have much bonus XP sitting around. So that might factor into it as well. And, you know, when you put it that way, oh, maybe I should be just gathering bonus XP now and then converting it into Dungeoneering tokens.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, the decisions and the personal moral dilemma. And I say personal in that regard because I said that, hey, Double XP is over. I use Double XP getting 120 Herblore. I don't need any more going forward, so I'm not going to use it. Hence why it becomes a personal moral dilemma
rather
than just a general one. So,
all right. And you know me. I try to keep up with all the trends. So
right.
I want to be in on it.
I didn't purchase these, but when you purchase them, does it go on your account or do you get a special token that you need to use?
You get a little token.
And then it just sits in your bank? Gem.
Yeah, as far as I can tell.
All right. Are they tradable? Probably not.
No. They're not tradable, and you cannot use someone else's.
Yeah,
and
that's good, I think.
An hour after you
that's good, I think.
Activate it. So...
I wonder how well this is going to go down monetarily. And, you know, we can talk about it being a good update from the sense of the players, but there's also the monetary side inside Jagex that I think we all need to look at too, that, you know, the biggest moneymaker aside from subscriptions is, of course, Treasure Hunter. We have Solomon's General Store, but Solomon's General Store itself is kind of meh. When it comes to the amount of profits it brings in compared to everything else. So I wonder where this will land.
Well, let me make a prediction here. This is what I think is going to go down. I think this monetarily will be one of their biggest sellers they've ever done. That being said, I think in general, people are not going to talk about buying Portable Vic. They'll keep that to themselves. Because the perception is it's bad. And so people are not going to go around talking about they did it, but they're all going to do it. They're all going to do it. I mean, why wouldn't you? It's your XP anyway.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And, I mean, if you're not purchasing keys, then, you know, you're getting it completely legit in the sense that every member has the same opportunity to do that. And to just say... what I got here for the next 4 days, I have 50% extra keys. I got in an email today. If I buy either the 200 or 450 key pack, I'll get an extra 50% extra free keys. So if that's the 200, that's an extra 100 keys. And 450, that'd be an extra 225 keys if I was to purchase keys on the next until April 29th. And factor that in with Vic. there you go. You can only imagine what that would be. And, you know, I think if you did purchase that key pack, I've never done this before, so I don't know what it feels like. I imagine it would feel dirty. How much does a 200 key pack cost?
I don't know if that's the $50 or the $100 one.
What?
I think the big one's $100. I think it's the $50. I'd have to look to. Don't quote me on that, but yeah,
it would be the 300 key pack with the extra would be $57.99 Canadian. And the 675 keys, regular 450 keys, would be $115 Canadian.
Okay, that's
so $58 for that. And I don't know how that would feel. Like I've never bought a pack.
You get tired of doing it. It depends. So, like there are times when in your grind that you're only like 2 mil away, and that $50 don't seem
too
bad.
I couldn't see myself doing that ever.
Yeah, I mean, I've never went that heavy. I've done like, I think they're like $20.
Like if I could turn off all the lamps in it, that might be more appealing. Like all lamps.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, well, I guess you could with the hearts or whatever, the ice thing, but
anyways, the point I'm making is that, you know, with these promos floating around, because I imagine there are other people who got that promo, and you factor that in with Vic, and if it was all bonus XP, I don't know how many Dungeoneering points you could get out of that, but that might be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of like how a religious person views sex. You know, like, it's a lot of fun while it's going on, but then you feel real, real dirty afterwards or something. But you get a little thrill after.
That's only if you're not married, though.
Well, that's true, but yeah, I mean, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, I guess we'll go with your prediction then that portable Vic will be very popular, and I think we can leave that there.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see.
Well, let's move on to the patch notes then for the week. So this week, big change to the way the charge bows work. There was previously an issue where charge bows would consume equipped arrows even if they didn't have an effect.
Oops.
So now they will only consume arrows that have a special effect on them, such as Bane, Broad, and of course Blackstone.
Okay. So.
Still, though, that's a pretty good change.
Yeah, I didn't even know that they would incorporate that. Like, I just thought they don't use ammo, period. They don't use ammo. So
right.
I didn't even know that they would use
it. But, I mean, the special effect of Bane, Broad, and Blackstone, you can't underestimate that. Because, you know, you might not necessarily want to use Bane arrows when you're fighting dragons, let's just say. But if you could use your, you know, tier 92 bow and have them have the Bane special effect, that would then be worth it. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
High detail reflections have been added to the giant gilded egg in the Lumbridge crater.
Oh, cool.
Looks kind of neat, actually. Mm-hmm. So if you have a good computer, log in, have a look at that. Moving on to ninja fixes. Increase the player's grand exchange sales history from the last 20 finished transactions to the most recent 40. That's going to be nice to see for archiving. Though I did wish there was a date on there for when they were completed. That would be interesting to see that going back. Leprechaun storage now has remove 5 and remove 15 options for planks. And of course, for anybody wondering why a leprechaun might deal in planks, if you have ever farmed grapes, you know that you need planks for that. One little concern with this one is that these only work for standard planks, whereas I have had an abundance of oak planks in my bank, so I would always just use oak whenever I would go grape farming. Yeah, I know, bit of a waste, but it's unfortunate that you can't put oak planks into the leprechaun. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I was one of those people that was wondering that. I'm like, what? What's planks have to? Why? Now I know. Yeah. Okay.
Added an option in social settings under the friends list to prevent other players from trailing you after you've added them to their friends list. So for anybody unaware of this, if you add someone to your list, there's a trail option. You can hop to their world and it will point an arrow to show where they are. And, you know, there are people who might value their privacy, or there are people who don't want to be trailed into the wilderness, for example. So this would be a good option to disable that. And I hope that Earth isn't listening to this part of the podcast, because whenever he's online, I have fun with this feature in tracking him down. So, miraculous treatments can now also be stored in the Tool Leprechaun, up to 2,000 of them, and that's the special invention item that will cure and prevent disease on a patch. And Ultra Compost storage cap has also been raised to 2,000 with this. And, you know, one thing I think that they could add on to this, and I realize this is in the ninja section, so maybe we could incorporate this as maybe a bit of a fix going forward with this, but it would be fun if you could also have the Divine Herb Protectors stored in the Leprechaun as well.
Yeah, that would make sense. That'd be cool.
Because let me just tell you this here. And I mean, you could say, oh, maybe I might just use miraculous treatment instead to revive if they've died. But I have also been doing herb runs this week with Spirit Weed after our talk with David last week. And Spirit Weed herb seeds are 16K a piece. So you don't want those ones to die. Yeah.
No. Out. Is the miraculous treatment, is that an invention item?
Yes, it is. It revives any dead farming patch.
Okay.
It basically takes it from the stage after disease, because the plant will get diseased, and then if you don't cure it while it's diseased, it will die. So it's basically brings the patch two steps backwards from being dead to before it got diseased, and then there will be a chance to not have it get diseased. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So actually, the disease preventer would be a much better option to be using.
Yeah, personally, I think that one would be the better option. You know, miraculous treatment is a 104 invention. So the herb protector, on the other hand, is let's see, what level is that? 96 invention. So it's less at requires less exotic components, in my view, to get. It doesn't require living parts. It only needs organic parts, which you get, you know, if you're disassembling logs, for example. So anybody who does logs in their disassembler has those. And healthy components, I'm not sure where to get those, but
I think they're from potions, aren't they? I could
or
be
food.
Wrong.
Food.
Or food. Food, yeah, food.
Right.
Okay.
So I mean it's up to you. Personally, I prefer the herb protector. But that's just me, because it means that I have a guaranteed amount of herbs coming in whenever I'm going to be going to harvest, rather than needing to use a miraculous treatment. So that's why I'd prefer the Divine Herb Protector instead. But that's just
me. Makes sense. Well, we listen to Shane when it's farming.
That's right. That's right. Next up, the statue bag now has a fill and empty option while clipped, allowing easier storage of newly collected strange and golden rocks. I didn't know this was a thing, because I don't do those statues. Did you?
Yeah, I keep the bags in my bank, though. I'm never equipped one, so I don't. That's weird.
All right, fair enough. The following items can now be saved as keepsake copies: Beads of the Dead, Awusa's Shoes, the Holy Cythera as a magic offhand, Trollwise Flowers, and the Lily of the Valley. And both of those last two will be melee offhands, or melee main hands, sorry.
Okay, cool. I love additions to things that you can keep.
Yeah, it's always nice to be able to, you know, run around with those flowers in your hand, but you don't necessarily want to keep them as an inventory item. So,
yeah, it just adds more, you know, flavor to the game and stuff.
Yeah.
Being able to do that stuff. Yeah.
Now, this next one is one that you might scratch your head about, but this is actually a really good usability fix, and that is that a fill option has been added to various water source locations like sinks, wells, barrels, and fountains. And, you know, if you look at the world map, you'll see that there's a water source icon on there. You can go to any well and fill up your vials with water. You can do that. But if you just click on the well, nothing will happen. And this is why this is a good ninja fix, because it adds another way of discovering that this item on the game world has a purpose other than just looking at the world map. And that, hey, maybe if I have a few buckets in my inventory or if I have a few vials in my inventory and you click this well, it will now give you the option to have it pop up. And you don't necessarily need to go through your inventory and click on the individual item and use it on the well. And the reason why this is such a good thing is because it removes the need-to-know basis of this, meaning that, you know, previously you would need to know that you can use a vial or a bucket or a bowl on a well to fill it up. But now you can actually click on this and you see there is a hover state that shows that you can fill something with it. So this is actually perhaps the best ninja fix this week, despite being not very useful to the majority of us. It is, I think, the best ninja fix this week, just from a pure usability stance. Next up, adding herbs to incense sticks now checks which one to make if you have multiple valid combinations, but only one single herb of each type.
I don't see why you would do that, but okay. It's fine. I don't know.
I think the reason for this comes is that, you know, if you have, say, one Lantadimi herb in your inventory and you have one Lantadimi stick in your inventory that's already been coated with ashes, it will just automatically make you one Lantadimi incense stick. But let's say you had multiple unfinished stacks of incense sticks and multiple stacks of only one herb in your inventory, you would now have a choice to choose which one it would make rather than just automatically picking one. Because recall that there are several of the incense sticks that do have the same stick but a different herb. So I think that's what this is fixing.
But you can do that from stacks? Like you can do them noted?
No. The incense sticks themselves are a stacked item.
Right, but not the herbs.
No, they're not. But this is said if you only have one herb in your inventory. But multiple valid combinations, but only one single herb of each type. So if you have one Lantadimi, one Torstal, it would have you it would give you a choice. And the example for this would be that if you had, you know, unfinished magic incense sticks that have been coated with ashes, right? But if you had a Torstal and a Felstock in your inventory and only one of them, it would ask you which one beforehand. Okay. And this is something that we see a lot in these patch notes, is that you have little notes in here like this that are confusing on their own. And they're very mechanically intensive, so much so that you need to just spend a couple minutes drilling down like we just did. So hopefully that clears this one up. Next up, collecting fire and divine fire spirits no longer moves the player or interrupts the continuous action of throwing logs onto bonfires.
Cool.
And move the trees near the Falador entrance to the dwarven mine near the party room to prevent the foliage from blocking the view of the door.
Oh, that's good. I always get mixed up.
Oh, really?
I didn't
know that was an issue. I just thought this was purely a cosmetic thing.
Now you got to tilt your camera and stuff to get to where you're going to click. So that's cool.
All right, fair enough. Opening times for chests inside shifting tombs has been improved, and you now fail less often. It'd be great if we knew what the magnitude on this was.
Come try shifting tombs, everybody. We made it better, we promise.
You know, I did maybe a couple runs of these when they came out, and I mean, I'm going to be completely honest with you. This is one of those things that had tons of promise, and I just have not had the ambition to go back to them.
No, I feel exactly the same way. And the spot that they occupied before, I feel like was pretty stepped on with safe cracking, and I much rather do safe cracking than shifting tombs. 1,000,000% would rather do.
Right. Safe. And the reason for that is because the interaction behind safe cracking is just so much simpler.
Yeah. I didn't care at
the wiki page for shifting tombs, you have to read the entire thing to get an understanding of what's actually happening there.
Yeah.
So, all right. That's it for the patch notes this week.
Not a lot. But,
Nope, not a lot. Not a lot at all. So
it was something.
It was indeed something. And I think the next something we have talks that we want to talk about is indeed the general Q&A live stream that came up this week. You have any thoughts on this off the cuff before we dive into some of the things that I've picked up on this that
When mentioned. I watched it, I really felt like it was a rehash of the previous week. Now, that being said,
we did get to see Mod Porky in the flesh.
Yes, Mod Porky was kind of the highlight of the stream for me too. Was actually be able to see who he is. So that was cool. And I loved the Comp Cape nicknames. I was like, oh, this is beautiful. I loved it. Like, that was my favorite part. But as for like the information, I didn't notice anything like different or groundbreaking or new. What I did notice is they're getting much better at explaining the whys behind the whats. I'm like, God, why couldn't you do this in the first? Like, why? Why does it take 2 or 3 weeks every time to actually come out and make something that makes sense to where we're going? Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I can't figure. They get all excited and they're telling us, okay, this is what we're going to do. And we're all going, yeah, but why? We don't need that. Like, what's going on here? You're going to break something. Like, put it down. You're going to break it. And then, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, they're like, well, this is why. And you're going, oh, well, okay. That makes sense. And I felt there was more of that going on this week. But I don't know, Shane. Did you notice a lot of like differences between what had been talked about before and this?
No,
week?
it was mainly clarification. And I'm going to sum up the meta viewpoint of the stream. And this is actually a credit to Mod Jack, I think, for this, and Mod Porky too, and Mod Shawnee as the ambassador of the stream. But basically, what the stream was and what I think is a good thing to take away from this is that the players ask a question, and then that question gets answered with a lens on top of everything that we have talked about recently in terms of the Comp Cape rework. And the sole purpose of this is that if there's a question that the players have, yes, we might already know the answer to it. And I think that's the general sense that you and I both got from this, is that we knew exactly what the answers were going to be to all these questions when the players asked them. And that's why we didn't pick anything new up, right?
Yeah.
So I think what ended up happening here is that it's a matter of perception, and it's going to be a key word for this podcast and this stream. This is a matter of perception that makes everybody listening to the Jagex live stream and asking questions on that live stream ultimately feel better about the update just because they got that little bit of personal attention, or that a question that one of their peers had that they had too was asked and answered. It will just make people feel better about the entire process. And the more that this is done, the less resistance there will be to the Comp Cape rework.
You know, and I thought something else that I think was key is there was an acknowledgement of certain things that have come up, you know, from the players this week that hadn't really been acknowledged before. And what I'm thinking of in this regard is like, you know, Mod Jack said more than one time, like, you can't please everybody. There's no way, you know, to, and I'm like, I've been saying that for weeks. Like, you know, like, but just that little acknowledgement, I think makes a difference. Like, it really makes a difference, because then you're going, okay, well, they get it. They know. But when they don't say that, you're sitting here wondering, do you guys get it? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I thought that was very, very good of them to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And this goes back to what we talked about last week, in that everybody comes to the table with a different perspective. And once you realize that, Jagex knows that because they have access to the data. But when you realize that as a player, that's why we entitled last week's episode, Welcome to the Third Dimension. Because once you realize that, it makes this entire comp gate rework make sense. Whereas if you're looking at it through the narrow lens of a PVM type, you want it to be harder. You're looking at it through the narrow lens of a skiller or a quester, you want it to be easier, probably. And yeah. Both sides are right. It's just a matter of perspective and the information that you have, and it's a matter of hearing from the orators on stage, in this case Mod Jack, how it's going to come down. And how he does that and how he does it masterfully, I think he did that on this stream, is key to guaranteeing the success of this update.
Yeah, well, and because and he's very tactful in saying, basically, piss off, I know what I'm doing. not in those words, but in a way, he kind of does say that, like, I got this. It's, I understand your concerns, and but I'm glad that they fill in around that, you know, because I think that extra context is what really makes a difference.
Yeah,
I love the name, though. I mean, can we call it the complaining cape forever now?
Or the complicated cape?
Yeah, the complicated cape. Yeah. Oh, the complaining cape. I was just like, oh, duh. I heard a choir of angels when that came. I'm like, yes, it's the complaining cape.
Yeah. All right. So are you convinced that this update will be successful? Yet.
I am. I hate to have to acknowledge this, but now, I'm only going to say this once. Ciaran was right 2 weeks ago.
What in particular was he right about, and what did he say?
He said that this is central to the game because it's dealing with in-game content, and this actually is something that people, or that they should be spending time on. And I thought this might be wasted development time. Where we're at now, it makes sense
from a game design perspective now that you're seeing more of it and you're seeing the different angles.
Yeah, we'll just go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are probably wondering for a bit of a summary of what happened in the stream. I took some notes throughout this, the pertinent points, I thought. They talked a bit about the visual feedback on the capes at the very beginning. He said the number one feedback they got is that the capes should be less busy than what they showed last week.
I noticed that. I thought, really? Like, I thought they looked really good. So I hope they don't trash that.
Well,
I thought they looked really
good. It's going to be pulled. There's going to be an option to have a busier option and a less busy option when they pull it. And he said prior to getting that feedback, they wouldn't have thought to do that.
Right. Well, and that's good. And I mean, I just hope people realize, like, whatever you're seeing like that, that's not what we usually, I mean, that's not what it looks like in game most of the time. It looks simpler in game. So, like, I don't know. I don't think. I thought they were good looking myself. I thought they looked real clean.
Yeah, same. Combat requirements have been dominating the chat on Discord regarding this cape. And the number one thing that they have been hearing that you said last week as well, and I don't know if you picked up on this, is they said, please don't lump group and difficult combat content together.
Yeah.
So it seems you're on the same page as the community in that regard. And they actually have a really interesting idea for this one. And you know, it seems logical, and I think this is kind of almost something along the same path we were floating with this. And he said that there is the potential to remove from the combat gate specifically hard group content, such as Next Angel of Death, Farrago, and Solak, and there was one other that he couldn't remember at the time, and also potentially remove extremely hard solo content, such as Telos, and then add in a trimmed heroic combat cape that would have the full requirements on it and may have even more specific challenging requirements like 2K Enraged Telos. And this would allow players to earn comp without doing the top-end combat, but still have the option to go for that heroic cape to get something a little extra on top. And he was careful to note that this wasn't the final design, but he is thinking of going this way.
I thought that was such a simple solution that I'm surprised we didn't pick up on it.
Yeah, and you know, it's simpler than adding boss story mode.
It actually is, yeah. And so I'm like, that, I'm totally cool with that. Like that, I'm happy with that solution.
Yeah. And you know, going forward, I still think boss story mode could be a good addition to new bosses, but this is a good way of getting it in for the comp cape. And what you're doing when you're taking on one of these projects typically is that you want to have the project defined, or rather well-defined, around a specific scope, as it's called, in that you want to be tackling a specific problem. And if you start tackling other problems, people might know that in the end is feature creep. Whereas if you start with, you know, wanting a comp cape rework, but you end up reworking the bosses so you have a story mode on them, that's design creep, and you headed off in a completely different direction on that. And there's questions that can be asked internally. Is that because of this, did we do a good job on the comp cape design? And because we went down this other path of, you know, adding boss story mode, was there anything else on the comp cape that we might have glossed over? So the very fact that this is all being kept very well-defined towards the scope of the project is indeed encouraging, because that just means there's less chance to go astray going forward.
Yeah, and like you said, I think I agree. There's a place for boss story mode. It may be in a different capacity, and that's fine. I think the brilliance of this kind of solution, though, is like where boss story mode makes – it basically opens up content to make it accessible for everyone. This attacks the problem from a different direction and strokes the ego of the PVMer. And
you know
what is more important than stroking the ego of a PVMer?
The best part about this is that having the option to do this, you know they would do it.
Exactly. But you're attacking it from that other end, you know what I mean? So like where I don't even have to bother with it and they get to parade around, you know, and just look like a pretty little peacock. So I'm totally cool with it. Like I said, I'm surprised that we didn't think about this. Yeah, it's just such a simple solution. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, isn't there some kind of like saying like the best solution is the simplest or whatever? And this is like the simplest.
Yeah, that's a design philosophy. KISS, keep it simple, stupid. That's why the Mac computers only have one mouse button. That's why the iPod click wheel was a thing. You can see over time how Apple has deviated away with that with the passing of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, they're not as simple as they once were.
So, that's a bit of an aside with that. Next up, the question was asked, and this was asked numerous times in chat, why are you putting so much effort to cater towards players who can't be bothered to complete content? And the answer, of course, this one is that content needs to work for different players, and there's more of them. And the design is aimed at bringing comp towards a bigger audience of players. An effort is ultimately being put towards players who do want to do more content but wouldn't be able to previously.
You know, when I heard that, I couldn't help but wonder, is this just a straight-up jerk, or is this someone that's just socially awkward and doesn't know how to word things properly? Because
you know, it sounds like a typical RuneScape player, to be honest.
Right?
You
know, yes.
Encounter on Reddit or something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, this person hasn't seen the other perspectives. This person clearly hasn't listened to our podcast yet. So, if I had the opportunity, I would have this person listen to everything we've talked about on the comp cape rework so far, and you'd see that, you know, that is a narrow viewpoint to have. And you know, when you're designing content, you want your content to be playable by as many players as it can, and if not, you're wasting your time, quite honestly.
That, like, duh. Like, that just that has to fall into a duh category, right? I mean, I don't know. I think when he talks about people being so hung up on the definition, like, this is a definition of complete. It's like, that's never what it was. It's never what it was supposed to be. It's not what it is. I'm like, thank you.
And definitions can change over time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what is the meaning of is?
That's right.
A throwback there, Shay.
Yeah. And this is where the stream, of course, gets interesting. There are multiple perspectives on any part of the comp cape, not necessarily just combat. And one of the ones that comes up often is, what is the legitimate way of getting 99 runecrafting? Before Runespan, if you got it before Runespan, you would have never have done the Runespan grind, thus really haven't done all of RuneScape and all of runecrafting. Or if you got it after Runespan, you didn't have to run runes and do traditional runecrafting. And therefore, those people view it as, hey, you didn't do runecraft the way it was when it first came out. And because of that, that's not a true completionist. And, you know, the answer that was put up to this question is that there is no proper way of skilling and there's no proper way of playing the game. Both ways count towards the completionist checkmark.
I love that answer. I loved that little, just that answer, because that's how I feel too. So I just completely agree.
Right.
And I mean, and I've heard stuff on, like, even, you know, either people on the show, like, well, you didn't runecraft back in the day. Like, you know, like, I mean, you're right. But again, I never thought of turning it around. Like, yeah, but you never did the Runespan grind. Like, because, man, that's a boring grind, right? So,
yeah. And, you know, it comes down to, you know, this is the way a good developer answers this question, because if you have a piece of content that can only be completed one way, that content is either new or it is one-dimensionable.
That's a new one, Shane.
Yeah, one-dimensionable years after release. And if it's still one-dimensionable after years of release, it's probably not a good piece of content.
Yep.
So there's another two perspectives on that answer. So, next up, why are you making comp instead of something else? Or another one that was asked often is, why are you making this? No one asked for it. And the answer to this one is that the team that's working on the comp cape rework would not be working on the bank rework, because they're not the engine team. They would likely be working on a small scale skilling update instead. And then Jack threw everyone for a loop and surprised many people, I think. He said that, you know, this comp cape rework isn't a hard update development-wise. In fact, the amount of time it will take to actually bring it into the game is smaller than the player-owned farm. But the hard part about it is what they're doing right now, consulting with the community and the design work.
Yeah, I totally... I mean, I get that. Like, I can see that.
And when you think about it, you have all these small little pieces of content come into game, and I'm going to take the incense burners, or the incense sticks, rather, because that's an update I'm still interacting with. What are we, 2-3 weeks after the fact now on this one?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a simple update to put into game. It's effectively combining items, creating some new items in game. But the design side of that update had an impact on Herblar, Prayer, and Firemaking. And because of that, the amount of design that would have went into the incense sticks was probably bigger than the actual implementation of it. And we're seeing that in that, you know, there are people out there like myself who like these smaller updates that just have so much in a small package. And that's what we're getting with this comp cape rework. And from that perspective and everything we've talked about so far, I don't know if I should say this, but it seems like anybody who doesn't want the comp cape rework at this point is short-sighted.
I mean, potentially, and I was one of them people, but look at how many of those questions are things that I've said or similar to.
Yeah.
questions that I've had. So, I mean, you know, at least you know you're not alone. If you've had those questions, you're not alone. I mean, apparently it's big enough to have, you know, been on their radar too. And they've been doing a much better job at selling the update and explaining it. And that has made a difference with me, along with, you know, talking through the actual process with you and Farnassius a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Bingo. Okay. And an answer as to why they're doing this, another one that I think people can identify with, he said that if you've complained about any comp achievement in the past, this is what they're trying to resolve.
See, I was not guilty of that one. I'm like, I'd always wished that Reaper wasn't on there, but I always knew that I really didn't have a leg to stand on saying that it shouldn't be there. Like, you know what I mean? So,
and we think about it, Reaper in itself is kind of an arbitrary thing. So,
right. You know, I want to add this to the mix too. You know, a lot of times when Mod Jack is talking about making something accessible, he's talking about making it accessible, like, to the community in general that aren't as skilled as high level, elite PVMers, right? But there's also another thing behind that. Like, there, you know, there are certain bosses that would be impossible for someone like me to do, right? Because I can't see everything at the same time. Like, I can only tell certain things, so there's no way you can keep track with mechanics. I mean, you know how it was when I went with you guys to the temple of
Elite Dungeon 1. You know,
yeah, I just, there's no way to get everything on my screen at the same time. By removing some of that, the most difficult stuff, that actually opens up the possibility of having that cape for me and people like me. So keep that in mind too. That's kind of a important thing.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Completely agree. Amnesty, was it ever considered? You know, they said there have been fewer achievements added in the last year or so. So probably if they did add it, it wouldn't take nearly as long as Menaphos, if anything, maybe a few weeks or a month.
Okay.
Which I think is okay. Personally, I am in favor of zero amnesty on anything for this.
Yeah, I mean, and they did say that if there ever was, it would, you know, there's a difference between amnesty for a sound, for a song track, and amnesty for we just took a grindy skill to 120. You know what I mean? Like, there is a difference. So I was glad they recognized that as well. But I've never been a big advocate for it. I'm really pretty indifferent, actually.
All right. Let's see, last main comp cape point with this, and, you know, Mod Jack reiterating this again, is there people who haven't heard it yet? If you disagree with the changes that have been made, you can just ignore them and keep the legacy comp cape.
Okay.
Get it before or after the update hits.
Yeah. So.
That's pretty much all I pulled from the stream. A couple of other interesting tiny tidbits. The Ninja team is going to be working with the community management team, with Mod Porky being the liaison between the two. So that's actually a fairly big role, and congratulations to you, Mod Porky, on that.
Yeah, very cool.
Because, you know, and this is something that needed to be done. Because, you know, it seems like all too often back in the past, and hopefully this is a sign of moving away from that, people would suggest a ninja fix on Reddit or Twitter, and it would just go into the game. And, you know, there was just a myriad of ninja fixes coming in. And we've seen in the recent months themed weeks for ninja fixes, right? Mm-hmm. And so that they can be focused around a specific game area. So I think that this is a good indication that this pathway forward is going to be continuing with emphasis on what the players want, but allow it to be focused rather than just, you know, looking at a specific Reddit thread and saying, hey, this is going to be the next ninja fix kind of thing. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. But yeah, that's pretty much the live stream. I don't think there's anything else I want to mention from it. You good?
No, I'm good, man.
All right. Well, let's move on to our listener questions. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to remind our listeners about our Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/RSBNB. And this week, I'd like to give special thanks to Brock H., Diana, Sojusta Devil, Tom V., and Zez. And Kyle. Sorry, I didn't mention Kyle in there in that list. Thank you all for supporting us on Patreon. Your support truly does mean the world to us. So without you and your friends who support us, this podcast, where we're at today, would not be possible. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And if you want to learn more about this, head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB. And what we're doing there is we're doing our monthly bit. That poll has just concluded. Our next monthly bit, as decided by the Patreon subscribers, will be about RuneScape lore, and in particular, RuneScape lore through the ages, and why this makes RuneScape a unique game, and perhaps maybe RuneScape being the only part of Jagex's IP that is truly valuable and keeps on giving going forward. So we're going to have a discussion around that, just how important the lore of RuneScape is. So if you want early access to that, or rather exclusive access as a Patreon supporter, head on over to patreon.com/RSBNB, and you can gain access to that one when it arrives, and our entire back catalog of monthly bits, all for as little as $1 a month. As well as if you do that, you get a special mention in our show notes, early access to them, and ability to join our roundtable discussions when we do them. And perhaps most importantly, it allows you to vote on the topics for the monthly bit. If you want to go further, for $3 a month, you can receive a special VIP rank on Discord, a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show, in addition to everything else. And if you want to go to the ultimate level, you can pledge $5 and you'll receive a shout-out each and every week on the show and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show, in addition to all the previous rewards. And we're currently doing our monthly bit. We also have Inside RSBNB Update, where we have a look at one of our hosts or maybe someone else from the production team, and we might even have a sneak peek at looking how the podcast comes together. And when we reach $50 a month, we'll be doing the RSBNB Update Roundtable on the first Saturday of each and every month. We'll have a general discussion in the RSBNB Discord about anything and everything RuneScape related. And finally, should we reach $99 a month at some point in the future, we will have movie night with Shane and Tannis in the RSBNB Discord. So all of this and more can be found at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks again, everyone.
Thank you.
All right, so we do have a discussion question from Parnassius in audio format, so let's hear what that has to say right now.
G'day, guys. It's Parnassius here with a quick question for the week. I've spent quite a bit of time in the wilderness recently chasing the revenant pets, and surprisingly have actually enjoyed my time out there. Sadly, I can only take out very cheap gear, even though I've only met 3 PKs in the 12-odd hours I've spent there, but don't want to risk, you know, dropping 200 mil. Now, on a recent live stream, the mod said there was work on reworking the death system so that the players won't lose their gear, just GP. What they were looking at is basically a double cost on death, what would happen in the main world. So the killed player would drop the same amount of GP that it would have cost to reclaim their items from death, and then also pay death to get their gear back. So, for example, if dying to Telos in gear that you had to pay 750k to get back, the player would still have to pay that to death, but then they would also drop 750k for the PKer. Personally, I really love this idea, as it would be less stressful and allow me to take better gear that would allow me to at least have a chance to defending myself against the PKer. So, my question is, do you think this will help bring more players into the wilderness, especially on top of the recent updates made there with the new Slayer tasks and such? And is there any other suggestions you'd have or content that you'd like to see added out there? Looking forward to your discussion on this and hope you all had a great Easter.
I think death in the wilderness is something that's a discussion that needs to be had if there's ever going to be a chance to revive PvP.
See, and I don't think we should revive PvP or PvP. I think that should take place in a duel arena where it's proper.
Okay. What would you do with the wilderness then?
What would you? I mean, we could do. The possibilities are endless. Like, you could do anything with it. Like, that's a huge chunk of real estate. Like, we could go into so much more stories. We could see, like, we could have a quest to see what it looked like during Zaros' reign.
Yeah, that was floated in the past.
There's so much that we could do. The problem, I think, with this is just that, to me, I don't see what difference it makes. Whether you have to rebuy your gear or not.
It's a net zero GP thing.
Yeah.
So that's okay, at least.
But you're still losing the same amount of money as if you lost your gear.
Yeah.
So the only difference is you're not going to the Grand Exchange to buy more gear?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that's really the only difference in it?
Yeah.
Like, that ain't why I wouldn't take stuff out there. I don't take stuff out there because I don't got the money to pay for it.
Right.
And I don't want to get... I don't want it to ruin my session. And, I mean, as bad as it is, it probably would. It gets me not in a good mood.
I've actually been thinking about this for a while, and I think to the way it works in Star Trek Online, in that every death in that game is actually safe, and you just PvP for the fun of it. I think that there's an option, because, you know, wilderness PvPing is core to what RS2 was when it first came out, right? I mean, everybody remembers selling supersets for $10,000 in World 18 Edgeville back in 2004, 2005. So I think one way of going around this is the following, and it's going to be a fairly radical shift, but I think we can do that with RS3. I don't know the feasibility of this because I've not fleshed it out any way further, so caveat on that. But I was thinking that an answer to this, because, you know, most of what you're wanting to kill in the wilderness isn't necessarily, you know, high levels where you need tier 90 gear, right? Maybe the Calgarian demons. I don't know. What do you need for those? Tier 85, probably?
At least. I mean, you kind of want a tier 90 weapon for all sure. Right.
Well, what if there was a specific set, a specific class of equipment that could only be used in the wilderness? And what if that equipment was creatable by the players through smithing, crafting, and runecrafting? And what if every time you died, that equipment degraded to the point where there was going to be a constant need for new types of equipment for each of these classes coming into game? Now think about that. We've long talked about there wanting to be an economy in game where players create the equipment, players create the weapons, players create the projectiles and whatnot, but everything is eclipsed by what happens in PvE, right? The bosses. So what if that was an option for this, and it was all done in the wilderness based on things that the players crafted? And I think that's one way of going about it. I think the other way of going about it is by making it so that the combat characteristics of EOC are tweaked in such a way that players can't get one-hit kills, because everybody knows that if you build up your adrenaline properly, you build up your specials, you build up your right rotations, it's going to be pretty easy to one-hit KO someone with the way EOC is. So I think combined with having a different set of equipment that could only be used in the wilderness, and maybe fine-tuning some of the EOC variables behind the scenes, could create a vibrant mechanism for PvP in the wilderness.
But then what? So I guess my question is what does a PKer get?
A PKer would probably just get GP.
Well, as long as they're getting GP, I guess that's all they're interested in anyway. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm stuck with the Wildy
as and you of. Would, and you would, of course, have to pay GP to repair the armor as well. So it's kind of the same net zero kind of thing. so that you're not adding GP to the economy. So, yeah.
But you're also not, I mean, you're not talking about mills and bills and that, you know, I think that's a better option. I mean, like I said, I tend to think that if
that's
you're
right, it wouldn't
PvP,
be mills and bills. It would be hundreds of Ks, yeah. Not a couple mil.
And that would be acceptable to me. Like that's acceptable. Although I think it's a lot more fun when they are safe deaths. That's the only time I've ever done PvP, and I had fun. Like,
I agree. That's the way it needs to be. Though there still needs to be a way to encourage people to go out and do it. And I mean, hey, it could just be a tax, kind of. Imagine it's kind of like a wilderness tax, right? If you die, you're going to have to pay, and someone else is going to get that money.
Right, but I think there's other things that we can do to make it, you know, do something more like what we did with World Event 2, of having those caravan type things and people defending them and people attacking them. I don't think it's right to go out there and just kill people that are scaling. I just don't agree with it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
You're not opting in for that. And so, like, I don't know.
On this topic, David did actually finish that article that we mentioned on last week's show regarding death costs and PVM. The Virago one is 2.2 mil for a death with his precept there. 6.8 at Solak, 2.0 mil at Telos, and 7.2 for his Elite Dungeons preset.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty high.
So, I mean, this is astronomically high, and, you know, I think if you were to look at the way PvP would work in the wilderness, people would be bringing something similar to these presets. And you don't want to be paying that kind of money.
No, you can't. I mean, it's not sustainable. Because
if you brought this kind of preset in, you would have a lopsided event in the wilderness where these people would be running crazy, and the only people who would be able to kill them are people who risk this much, which creates the problem we had initially with the dual arena. And that's why I go to my solution of having specific armors and equipment that everybody can create with the skills that exist in game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the best realistic solution we're going to get.
Because the solution Parnassius proposes, someone who killed David, if he was to go into wilderness wearing the Solak preset, and it's not going to be exactly like that, you would get 6.8 mil. And he would still need to pay that.
Well, he'd still need to pay 12. Because it's doubled.
Oh, he said it would be doubled?
Yeah.
Oh,
he
I missed
you,
that.
You would drop the 6 to the PKer, but you'd have to pay Def another 6 to get your stuff. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't, maybe I don't understand it clearly, but I don't know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like we want something on that effect.
No, I want people to be PvP. Because they want to, and because they're trying to. I don't want, like, to me, it's like, oh, you got skilling places out there, and you're taking on a risk when you go out there. I mean, that's like,
the risk is not worth it.
You're baiting a trap.
The risk is not worth it. It's probably an additional, I don't know, 10 to 15%, but it's not worth the chance of being killed and having to pay.
No, and right or wrong, this is a tiny percentage of the players in this game that do that. So,
and the only reason
we need to make some big, huge overhaul to Def because of five people that still like to go PvP and pick on skillers.
The only reason that Abyssal Runecrafting works is because it's a short run.
Yeah. Yeah.
And solo wilderness.
Yeah, it's hard to catch. It's hard to catch someone in that little space. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. I do think it needs to be a safe death. I still do also with that think there needs to be rewards too. So,
right. Well, and even when you think about I think warbands work pretty well, and everyone
except
that's
for the
going out there,
XP you can get out of that. PC. Well,
that aside, I'm just saying, like, the actual PvP mechanics of warbands seem, I mean, everyone knows what they're doing. Everyone goes out there with an understanding of what's going on, and they seem to work pretty well. And I would rather see that kind of stuff, not the stuff we have. And I'm sorry, but it's way too much real estate for the five people that do it. Like, that is real estate that we could be using in this game for a much better, bigger purpose.
I think we're trying to find a use for the wilderness just because it's got such a huge legacy element behind it.
But all those people are playing OS. They're not.
Yeah, that's here. Where they went. That's where they went. That's true.
You know, like, I mean, Mod Jack said it. You got to look out for as many people as possible, yeah. Not the little, you know, groups.
One thing I'd be interested to see is after the Wilderness Slayer update, what percentage jump in engagement did we see with the Wilderness?
I bet it isn't much. I mean, it probably was for that week. But have you been back out there, Shane?
No.
No, me neither.
No.
There you go.
No. And thinking of the reward shop, people are probably going to go for the rune pouches, and that's about it.
Yeah, or they might get their weapons, but then you're going to be done. I mean, it's a lot more work to get, you know, a weapon that's going to retail you, what, 20, 30 mil? I mean,
but you
why
don't
do
even
that
need
when
that.
You don't need it. It's pretty much outclassed from the beginning. And
yeah.
I mean, and why do that if you're like, if you can do what David does? You got that in an hour. Tell us. Well, what's the point?
Well, I mean, there are still questions about that, and I'll highlight that article again about death costs and whatnot, the cost of PVM. So, you know, just give that a read at informer.rspmb.com. You know, it's a different way of thinking. You know, I don't know anybody else on Informer who is necessarily going to agree with the title and the premise of the article, but he does make a convincing point about it.
Well, it's good to see the other side of things. That's very welcomed and appreciated.
And that's what we pride ourselves on here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I just, I don't know. I, as you can tell, I've never been a fan of the Wilderness.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, just not.
All right. Well, I think we've rounded the discussion on that one. I don't know if there's anything else that we want to bring up with this. Once again, it's me taking ideas that are submitted to us and massaging them into something else. So, because I honestly don't think it would be sustainable to take in the high level equipment that we have in game right now. I just don't. Based on what I've seen of death costs, absolutely not. So.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't.
So that's why I think we need a third option for that. Oh. Alrighty, thank you, Parnassius. Next up from Tycho. Dear RSBNB, maybe you have noticed or never paid much attention to it, but there's been a topic taken up once in a while during the many hours of podcasts. I'm talking about the jokes of Star Wars, rising as the Dark Menace. Is that a thing?
Huh?
The Dark Menace in Star Wars?
The Phantom Menace? I don't know where he's getting at.
Anyways, okay. Well, there have been many claims that RSBNB have Star Trek close to at heart. The Empire hasn't really struck back. So this week, I'm going to help you, Shane, bring a balance to the Force by answering these questions. These two questions. Number one, in Star Trek, there's a character called Q, which seems quite popular with the audience. Could you tell us who he is and what role he provides for the viewers? And number two, I, for some time, have considered to buy a few seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation on DVD, but do you need to be a science nerd to understand Star Trek or have a master's degree in engineering to understand every word that Data says? And he says at the end, and I'm gonna get nailed for saying this, but may the Force be with you and fair in balance, Tycho Elf of the Nordic Lands.
May the Force be with you, Tycho.
right. Well, Q is an omnipotent godlike being that effectively sees the galaxy and sometimes Captain Picard and crew, his plaything. And there are funny Q episodes that are comic relief, and there are ultimately also sometimes Q episodes that are able to form the entire nub of the series. And the best example of this is that the first episode of Next Generation deals with Q, but also the last episode of the series also dealt with Q and effectively tied the two together and provided what I feel as one of the very true messages that come from Star Trek. And that's not that it's not always about the space battles and, you know, going out there to meet new people and whatnot. It's about exploring not only space, but exploring what you, whether you're human or not, what you can ultimately become. And that's the premise of the final episode of Next Generation. And based on what we've seen with Star Trek Discovery, Season 3 could be on that vein as well, based on some of the way things are going. So that might be interesting on that regard. But that's pretty much Q. Very important part of Next Generation. Can be a absolute comic relief, or it can provide absolute seriousness of content. So,
see, I have very little. I have some experience, but because that was the series that I did watch. But I always felt like the Q episodes were disturbing. Like they disturbed me. Maybe I was just too young or something. But they always kind of disturbed me because that's like where they were like almost like pets, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I found that disturbed me.
Well, there was also the Q episode where he introduces them to the Borg in season 2.
Yeah, and that didn't turn out very well.
No, it didn't. But just look what the Borg become in Voyager and later on. So there's that. There is also Cupid. That was one of the more comic relief ones as well. So I don't know. It can go either way. And you know, I wouldn't get too hung up on Q, to be honest. So, in regards to question two, no and no to both of those questions. It's very human at the end of the day. And if anything, what you do end up understanding throughout all of it is the lore of Star Trek as you watch more of it.
That makes sense. I never thought that, like, you'd have to know a lot about science because, I mean, it's all, when we're talking about fictional, science fiction, you know, to begin with, like, sure, in 2019, yeah, we've actually made a lot of the stuff.
iPads.
But, yeah, right? You know, we actually have these things now, but I don't come from the same kind of background. I never really felt like I couldn't understand it or anything.
Yeah. Yeah,
but like I said, my experience is a little bit, you know, it's more limited because I'm, I've always been in love with the Force.
Yeah. Next Generation and Voyager are universe building, so to speak. Deep Space Nine does some of that too, but that also ties back to some of the Next Generation things. And Star Trek Discovery has done a really good job of tying into arcs from the original series and whatnot. So if you saw something in the original series, there might be a callback to it in Discovery. So that's what Discovery does really well. And if you like that kind of thing where you have a science fiction series like Star Trek and you like how everything gets tied together and how it forms one huge legacy and one huge effective lore collection, the game Star Trek Online is something that you should absolutely look into, because what happens with that is that there might be a single episode or something in a Star Trek series that's really kind of just left hanging at the end. But in Star Trek Online, they might make a couple of in-game episodes about that, or might even base an entire storyline around that. And they did that with one of the episodes in Enterprise. They also did that with a couple of Voyager things here and there as well. So if that's the best part about Star Trek Online, is that it pulls on all these threads and makes them their own. So that combined with Star Trek Discovery just provides a really over-encompassing universe that's all tied together.
That's pretty cool. I can't wait for when's the new Picard series gonna come out? Because I'm definitely watching
that. Tail end of this year.
Okay.
Yeah, they started production this past week.
Okay. Yeah, that's one that I can't wait. I can't wait to see.
I'm
into that.
It's going to be the furthest point we've seen forward. Presuming it'll air before season 3 of Discovery, but spoilers on that front. It'll be set 18 years after the events of Star Trek Nemesis, the last movie. So,
18 years?
Uh-huh.
Well, he's going to be pretty old now.
Yeah, because Nemesis was 2003, and we're in 2019 right now. So that's 16.
So that's 16 years.
So 18, and you know, if the current plan that they have on the blueprints for that series is for it to go for 3 seasons, maybe more, but 3 seasons are at least generally penned out for the Picard series. So with that, by the end, 18 years will put us to the exact real time period where we're at. So
you think we'll get goosebumps the first time we see him sitting in his chair? On the bridge.
We don't even know if that's going to happen because it's very likely that he's not captain anymore. Because what happened after Nemesis was that we had the Star Trek 2009 movie, and one thing that did establish in the main universe is that Romulus was destroyed, the homeworld of the Romulans, and there was a point in time where Picard was also the ambassador to Vulcan. And those two races are inherently linked close together with that. So the hunch is, and I agree with this, is that the Picard series is definitely going to examine the way the universe looks following the collapse of the Romulan Empire and where the Vulcans are at mainly as well. And they always like to draw on real-world parallels too. Like, so one example might be, with all this happening, say that Romulan-Vulcan reunification was indeed possible, what would it look like maybe if the Vulcans wanted to leave the Federation, being one of the founding members of it? And this would, of course, touch on real-world parallels, otherwise known as Brexit. And that's what Star Trek has always done, is that they've managed to broach these real-world issues without necessarily calling back to them, but addressing the social commentary behind it beautifully. And if that's the kind of thing you like, then Star Trek is what you want to watch.
Yeah, definitely some political intrigue on with that race, right? Like, I've always found them as kind of like back channel, backbiter,
right?
Sneaky.
And with their homeworld
sneaky
gone,
Romulans.
Who knows what they're going to turn out. And Star Trek Online has an arc about the entire destruction of the Romulans and how that – of their homeworld and how that went. And they actually – the folks who make Star Trek Online were actually in talks with CBS – about this, so they're working close together on this, so we'll have to wait and see how much of the Star Trek Online lore is brought into the series and vice versa, if the game needs to retcon anything and whatnot, but there have been conversations between the two of them, so they are working close together on that.
Okay, that's something that I've actually been thinking about a lot in regards to something I have coming up, but I like how Star Trek Online is kind of like the Star Trek game, right?
Yeah. There are also so many actors in game. Recently, for the game's next expansion, they got two of the actors from Star Trek Discovery on it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got into it when I first started it, and I'm like, I'm going to probably not play RS as much if I keep doing this. So I had to back away a little bit. One difference, though, that I notice is, like, there are just tons and tons and tons of Star Wars games, right? But there's so many of them. There's so many different ones. And they might tell different, you know, different aspects of the lore, books, movies, what have you. But it is nice that Star Trek, that's kind of what you think of when you think of a Star Trek game. You kind of think of Stowe, whereas if you think of this a Star Wars game, which one?
Yeah,
there's so many. Yeah. You know,
and really good thing about Stowe, it gets updated weekly like RS does, not with content updates, but with patch notes every week and a new content update every month or so. So in some ways, it's kind of on the same pace as RS.
You know, it doesn't take long to realize just how massive that game is and how little you are.
Yeah.
and like, I'm like, oh gosh, I'm looking at years here to get even just a grasp.
Yeah, it takes about 3 weeks to level up from one to 65 if you're playing the storyline. That's the best way to level up. But mechanically wise and whatnot, it is obtuse. I consider myself probably at the B grade of mechanics, and let's just say that that's probably around the 90th percentile mechanic wise. But there are so many mechanics in that game, some that even I still don't grasp as well. And back in the day, I used to run the top PvP fleet in the game, and you know, we effectively wrote the book on mechanics at that point. But it got, of course, obsoleted and whatnot going forward, and it is quite in depth.
See, I can barely fly the ship. Like, I haven't even, like, I don't even feel like I do that right, like, half the time.
Yeah,
just in a little beginning part, you know, like I'm. It took me a while. I felt real awkward with the controls and stuff. Better now, but
how is it for accessibility compared to RS?
Well, I mean, frankly, it's better.
Because you can scale the text in the UI.
You can scale the text in the UI, but there's so much more voice work too.
Yeah,
and that it's just. It's better. I mean, there's really nothing I can say, man. It's better.
Yeah, and you know, completely free to play. They've also added in a new mechanic where you can work towards by completing the featured task force operations, as they're called, to get the ships that are normally $30. So if you do one of those for, I think it's like 60 days, you do. Featured task force for 60 days, you'll have until September to do it. You effectively get a $30 ship for free.
Oh, that'd be cool. I need to pick something and just stick with it.
Yeah. And
that's my problem, because I'm constantly starting over.
And that's the other great thing about it is at this point in time, I probably have about 6 characters that are active and all do different things. And you know, you can have pretty much anything under the sun. It works on any character at this point in the game. And I have a tradition where I name my characters after people I know. And my most recent character is an engineer named Sirion. And it's one of the most fun characters I've ever developed.
There you go. See, I will start playing and then, you know, a week or
you
two
gotta,
will go
you
by.
You got to keep like, on one thing. Otherwise, you're going to shift around. Yeah, and that's why you'll end up creating multiple characters if you get sucked in.
Yep. That's why I'd be like, I want to try this race though. And I want to try, you know what I mean? And I did that like repeatedly and I still haven't figured out where
race
I
doesn't really matter though.
Okay.
Yeah. But faction and whatnot does as well. So it's in depth. And as you can tell, we've jumped off the edge here.
On I know. And this is just Star Trek. Wait till we get a Star Wars question. Then I'm really go to town.
All right. Well, if you guys want to send your own questions in, you can email them to questions@rsvmb.com, or you can leave us a text message, or not a text message, a direct message on Twitter @rsvmb, or just send us a mention there and we'll include your question in the show. Also, update.rsvmb.com/ask. We live on your questions, so thank you very much to the both of you. Tech news. I knew this was going to be a story when I saw the initial reveal.
You know, when we covered this a while back, I thought there's no way it's going to work. This is a dumb, dumb idea.
Well, here we are. Samsung delays their Galaxy Fold launch indefinitely, saying that we will take measures to strengthen the display, and a new release date will be announced within a few weeks. So that doesn't mean it'll be released in a few weeks. They're going to announce a new release date in a few weeks. And in case you're wondering what this is the Samsung phone that they unveiled a couple months back that was $2,000, and it was going to be the first foldable phone. And it was, you know, scheduled to go on sale at the beginning of May, and it's on hold indefinitely now.
Yeah,
because the screen cracked when they folded it.
It's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I mean, $2,000, it's like it's an expensive phone and an expensive tablet. Like, I can't imagine who it's for. Like, I cut your losses, guys. I mean, you're not going to sell any of these.
And even if you're using it in the folded form as a phone, look at how thick it is.
Yeah, it's like 2 inches thick. Like, who can get that in their pocket? Like, yeah. I don't know.
I don't understand Samsung, but I mean, I guess at least this one's not exploding.
Yeah, that's good. Well, you know, and I guess a lot of the problems came from people were removing the screen protectors because there wasn't anything that said, do not move the screen protector. And what do you do when you get a new phone? You usually peel off the little plastic screen protector. Well, in this case, they were absolutely essential to the thing operating correctly because of the OLED screens are really delicate, apparently. Yeah.
You want to have those behind glass because they're almost like a membrane kind of fluidy thing.
Right. So they're like, but, you know, it did great in robot testing. I'm like, forget the robots. Give it to 10 Americans in 10 days. We'll break it. We will just everyday wear, you know, because it was like dirt and stuff that basically broke them.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, what do you think is in your pocket?
Yeah, even lint, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, with this, initial findings from the inspection reported issues that on the display that show that they could be associated with the impact on the top and bottom exposed areas of the hinge. And there was also an instance where substances found inside the device affected the display's performance. And, of course, that is the dust you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And Samsung should know this too. You know, they produce active lines of their phones, like the Samsung S whatever Active, which is a phone that doesn't have all the shininess to it and is just designed to be a rugged device for people who need to take it onto a work site or something, surrounded by dust and whatnot. You would think Samsung would know that in this case.
So. Yeah, and I mean, I know people that have jobs like that that do carry tablets because they're required to. But there's, I mean, how many other people actually are actually carrying a tablet around with them everywhere they go?
Yeah.
Like, you just don't need that.
You don't need that. And, you know, I think we're entering an era where all the phones are increasingly large because of their nature of removing bezels and whatnot. And I'm beginning to question even if we need these large of a phones. And, you know, obviously I went with the plus sized iPhone for RS Mobile. But last week I was holding it for, you know, hours on end, and it just was, my hand was sore after it. So I'm wondering if we actually even do need these large phones, and if we should head back to a point in time where something along the lines of the standard iPhone 8, 4.7 inch, or maybe even the iPhone 10 or 10S as it is today, is the biggest smartphones that we have out there.
You know, I don't mind bigger phones. Like, I like my 8 Plus. Because,
right, because they... Cause
I mean, obviously.
Easier for you to
yeah.
see.
Yeah. But I've never had my phone and said, oh, I wish I could unfold this to a tablet.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's never happened.
Yeah. Alrighty. Next up with this, DNS over HTTPS is coming whether ISPs like it or not. And, you know, if you're wondering what all these letters mean, well, I got an explanation for you.
Thank goodness.
So, first to unpack this, DNS stands for Domain Name Service. And this is what happens when you enter in a URL into your browser. So you enter google.com. And what happens is that your computer makes a request to something called the DNS server, most of the time at your internet service provider, the ISP. So you say google.com, your computer makes a DNS request to the DNS server at your ISP, DNS domain name system. And what that does is it's effectively a phone book, and it looks up the IP address, that is the numbered address of the server for Google, because that's how the internet works. So you enter in google.com, and in a couple of milliseconds, it reports back that the IP address of google.com is, you know, whatever it is, and then it goes and retrieves the data for it. Okay? So that's what DNS does. Without DNS, we would have IP addresses running around the internet. That's how you get google.com, facebook.com, twitter.com, rather than having to enter in a number. So with that being said, we also have HTTPS, which of course is what you see up in your browser address bar. HTTPS:// google.com, https://facebook.com. And when you do that, you see a little lock up there. You see a little green box showing you that your connection to that server is indeed secure. And what that means is that any data transmitted between you and that website is encrypted with that, what at this point is deemed and thought to be unbreakable encryption, so that anybody who is watching the traffic, so somebody at the ISP or potentially another server farm along the route, because it's important to note that when you make a request to Facebook.com or Twitter.com, your request isn't going directly to them. It's hopping through a bunch of different servers on the internet. Like, for example, if I was to make a request to the RSBNB web server where these podcasts are stored, I would move, my request would most likely move from Edmonton to Calgary to Winnipeg, then on over to the East Coast where our server is. And the idea behind that is that if you weren't running a secured HTTPS connection, the data you're sending to the server in question, whether it be Facebook or Twitter, could be viewed along the path. And that's why HTTPS connections have become so prevalent in the recent years, is because it just basically ensures that anything you're sending to anywhere on the web is going to reach its destination without being read by a third party. So that's one side of the equation. Then in comes DNS over HTTPS, which is what we're talking about today. And, you know, you might think you're doing good with the HTTPS connections that you have, but DNS hasn't been encrypted. So what this means is that aside from the original server, when you're making that request, servers along the route would be possible to see the request that you're making. So what DNS over HTTPS will effectively allow users to have is privacy from your computer to the server where you're making the connection, so that no one knows along the way, your ISP or any other server that the request is passed through, if the traffic is going to YouTube or if it's going to Facebook. They just won't be able to know with DNS over HTTPS. Plus, it also has the benefit of security, in that the request can't be altered to have it go to a different server than the one you intended. That's a rare kind of attack. It requires someone to have infiltrated one of those servers, hence why it's called a man-in-the-middle attack. That's rare, but this will also prevent that from happening. So the big win here is that all traffic on the internet with this will inherently look random. And that's why ISPs are worried about this, because content delivery networks like Akamai and whatnot, and Cloudflare, and even YouTube for this matter, or even Steam, who uses this to cache game downloads, they're going to make it difficult to know which request is unique and manage their caching for what they're serving to people. And of course, ISPs and governments are also worried, because it just makes it so that internet requests can't be tracked. So that's what DNS over HTTPS is and why it's a big deal.
So how long do you think it's going to take for big corporations to jump in here, pay off our politicians, and make sure this never happens, because they want that data to sell you shit?
Well, the beautiful side of this is that there is no way they can do that, because you could start up your own DNS server running on a server that you own somewhere and use it to do DNS lookup requests, and it could use DNS over HTTPS, and there would be nothing people could do about that.
Oh, all right.
So Google is pioneering this with their 8.8.8.8 DNS system, where it will ensure that all DNS requests made to it are secure. So other companies like Cloudflare and Mozilla are also jumping on board with this as well. So even as though people might, you know, want to prevent this from happening, it is strictly ad hoc with the way that the internet is designed.
Well, I'll take the good with the bad that comes, and I think this is better than where we're at now.
Yeah, and the idea behind this is that, you know, with Google supporting this, the idea is that they could make it so that the DNS servers that Chrome uses for all of Chrome's requests, of course, Chrome being the biggest web server out there, could be their own DNS servers. Now, granted, you don't want to change someone's DNS server without asking them, but with Chrome supporting this, if they did decide to do this from a privacy perspective, and if Mozilla wanted to do this as well, you would effectively be able to cover the vast majority of the browser market.
That'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Now, the only catch with this is that if anybody did want to know what was being sent, they would then need to ask the DNS server provider, such as Google or Mozilla or Cloudflare. But if they're using industry standard encryption with this and they don't keep any logs, because what's the point of keeping encrypted logs, then that is one area where this could be potentially banged on by government agencies. So it would move the point of attack from every little ISP to the big corporations like Google and Mozilla.
We don't have a bunch of little ISPs.
Well, that's true, but I'm like just speaking about the I know, but I'm just speaking about the rest of the world. So,
all right, yeah. I think it's a win for us anyway.
Yeah. But it's going to be interesting to watch and see what happens when this becomes part of Google's DNS system. I think I'm using that, or I might be using my ISP ones. I'm not entirely sure because, I mean, anybody listening to this podcast likely hasn't heard of or doesn't even know what their DNS servers are, what DNS servers they're using at the moment. So,
I sure don't.
All right. No clue. Let's jump on to our next story. And, you know, this is something that deserves a bit of chat about this. And this all started off with a tweet the other night by Tim Sweeney, the CEO of Epic Games. And, you know, I honestly think he was just talking out of his mouth here, not really making a actual pledge on this. But he said on Twitter, if Steam committed to a permanent 88% revenue share for all developers and publishers without major strings attached, Epic would hastily organize a retreat from exclusives while honoring our partner commitments and consider putting our own games on Steam. I don't believe he would do that.
No.
Absolutely not.
Was he drunk? He was drunk. I mean, he must be pretty confident Steam would never do that, but boy, if they called his bluff, he'd be screwed. And you know what? I mean, Valve has enough money, they probably could call
its
bluff.
Oh, yeah, they could. They could. And, you know, there's an actually interesting article on this, and it highlights the true side of this here, and so much so it calls it deceptive propaganda. And, I mean, you can read this on Kotaku and whatnot, but Kotaku doesn't even begin to scratch the entire story of it. This article here begins to talk about it a bit, but the article effectively is calling out Tim Sweeney, the CEO, for deceptive propaganda, in that he also brings up the underhanded method of dealing with competition, which of course is to steal the exclusives for the Epic Games Store by bribing game studios and making and profiting as much as possible within their 6-month launch, as of course we're seeing with most recently Borderlands 3.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And I don't believe in exclusive deals at all. I don't like that. That's a practice in the industry. I've never liked it when it was like console exclusives or anything like that. I just feel like that stuff should be open, but
yeah. And yeah, you know, they can say that about developers, but there's also this little known fact about Valve that they let their indie developers have all the profit after $100 fee. And this shows that it's not the individual developers that's the problem. It's actually the big AAA publishers that are causing this. Yeah. Because if you talk to indie game developers, that is the allure of Steam, is that you get most of the profits.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, there we go. Here we go again. Thanks, EA. Yeah.
Another well, they don't.
They're not on there, but still, yeah. you know what I mean.
Another part of the sugarcoating here that he says, aside where they say the blatant lying of caring about the consumer is the way he talks about developers. And he's right to point out that developers aren't the ones profiting off of these Epic exclusives as much as the publishers themselves.
Yeah, no, it's the
and that's
it's
why Epic wants that. It's because they want to get into that situation where they can have a cut just like all the big publishers do. And yeah, you know, in 88, and I think we should talk about 88 because 88 is an important number because that means 12% is left over. But the benefit of 88 as well is that it's a number with two of the same digits in it, 8 and 8. And that sounds good. It looks good on paper. And that's a really good marketing standpoint. So with that being said, you know.
I don't know if it's such a good marketing point.
Well, I mean, for people who, yes, when you dive into it, it's not. But if you're looking at it on, if you're looking at it on the surface, it looks good, right?
I guess. I mean, as long as you're not a big fan of history or things like that, 88's not a good. That's kind of a low key. It's not good. You know what it like stands for, like the history behind that number,
no.
And everything, right? Like it's
no.
not good.
What is it?
It's a neo-Nazi kind of. A wink and a nod to
each. Oh, really?
Yes. It's used a lot in those circles, being the eighth letter of the alphabet being H.
Oh.
So put that together.
Oh, I see. All right.
Yeah. Fair so, enough. I mean, you'll see it a lot, like a lot of prison tattoos.
Okay. So there's another underhanded.
Yeah. There's a real underbelly to it.
You know, and then this ultimately just ends up, and then finally claiming that Steam's cut is excessive and based on a monopoly, Sweeney can justify bribing game publishers to exclusivity deals in order to hit Valve's bottom line. The vast majority of these sales happened in the first 6 months, making these timed exclusives a coffin nail for Valve. I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't. Yeah. I don't think the Epic Store is really going to.
No. The only reason it's taking off is because it's got those big games on it, like Borderlands 3. And even then, I don't know if that'll be a success, right?
I mean, I'm sure it will. The game. I mean, I'm sure that'll be an awesome game. But they only get it for 6 months, and I know a lot of PC gamers aren't necessarily the go wait in line and rush out to get the day of release game, mm-hmm. like. Why do that mm-hmm. when you can wait 3 months and there's going to be a Steam sale and it's going to be on sale?
That's right.
Half price. You know, I
buy
really
any
feel like,
game at launch unless you're a huge fan of it.
Yes. So I don't know. I think this is just, this must be how they do business in China, right? This is just what they do. But I don't think it's going to work.
I think you're entirely right. It does reek of that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, nonetheless, I mean, no, I honestly think that they're entirely wrong with this. And when it comes down to it, Steam is better for the independent game developer, probably. So.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to give me one hell of a reason to try and switch my entire library over. I mean, I'm not going to do it. I might get a couple games from your thing, but my main library is coming from Steam. I don't see any way around that. You know, I might have a couple on Origin. I might have a couple on Epic, but I mean, the bulk of my library is always going to be on Steam. It has more to offer.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on this one? I think that pretty much covers it.
Moral of the story is Tim Sweeney was drunk and shouldn't use Twitter.
Yeah, and you know, I think people are going to be alert to these kind of messages because, hey, we're helping developers get more profit, but little do people know that indie Steam developers can receive majority of profit for their games. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's it for tech news. We are going to move on to other things right now. And I do have an announcement regarding the June Skills of the Month. Yes, I did say Skills of the Month there because we are running our new system. We will be running two Skills of the Month in June. Wait, not June. May. Next month is May. Sorry, I got ahead of myself there. for May, we're going to be running Firemaking and Slayer. Firemaking is because we are effectively relaunching Skill of the Month with this. And back in November 2006, Firemaking was our first Skill of the Month. So we're going to do it again. And what better way to also have one that is combat-based? And I think Slayer is a good way to train combat. So Slayer is a good choice as well. And how do you sign up for this? Well, you just head on over to the same URL that you've always done, rsbnb.com/skotm. Sign up. Enter in your RuneScape name, enter in an email address if you want an email when the competition begins, and we'll see what we got. rsbnb.com/skotm. Or if you want a link to click on, you can find that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. All right, so what have we got for achievements of the week?
We got some good ones. We'll start off here with Prodigal Gaze with 99 Thieving on April 23rd. Again with Prodigal Gaze with 99 Hunter on April 23rd. And Prodigal Gaze with 99 Crafting on April 23rd. Prodigal Gaze again with 99 Mining on the 23rd. Wow, it's just on fire. Prodigal Gaze with 99 Divination on April 22nd. Really super busy. Then we have Pernasius with 120 Herblore, April 22nd. Awesome job. And Pernasius with 200 mil ranged on April 20th.
Wowee. All right. Next up, we have Delta Blazing with 99 Invention, and also on April 20th. Congratulations. Then we have your alt account, Tennis Jr., with 99 Farming on April 20th. How'd you do that one?
POF. POF.
Yeah. Okay. Next up was Murovic with 99 Fishing, also on the 20th. Delta Blazing with 99 Mining. Prodigal Gaz with 99 Construction. Then moving on to the 18th, we have Cabrew, otherwise known as our friendly PVM expert David, with 120 Attack on the 18th. Then Blindman0122 with 99 Dungeoneering. And Captain Metaphor with 99 Cooking, also on the 18th of April. Nicely done, everyone.
Good deal.
Alrighty, so just a bit of a reminder, we are still doing this till the end of the month, our spring survey, which you can find at update.rsbnb.com/survey. I know I mention it at the start of every show before we begin because I just want to get everybody engaged in that before we begin the fun stuff. But if you haven't yet, you know, hit pause, do the survey, update.rsbnb.com/survey. We'd very much appreciate your input. What we're doing with this is we're trying to gauge where our community is at and where our listeners are at, what you like about the podcast, where you listen to the podcast, and what we can do with the podcast going forward for the next 6 to 12 months. These kind of surveys really help us out in planning the route the podcast takes and learning about you guys and how we can better deliver the podcast to suit your needs. So we'd very much appreciate it if you'd fill this in. Visit update.rsbnb.com/survey. All right. I think it's time for a pick of the week.
I think so. Do you got one for us?
Yeah. And, you know, this is a pick of the week that has been batting around in the back of my head for a while, and we finally need to discuss this one. I think it is time. And, you know, the Comp Cape rework brought this one forward. The Mining and Smithing Cape, Mining and Smithing rework initially gave me the idea to bring this one forward, but the Comp Cape rework really has. So you recall that last week we had our show entitled Welcome to the Third Dimension. And, you know, the reason I said that is because it's all about perspective and all about framing and understanding of what's happening with that. And I think I have a book here that's going to help everybody understand that kind of thinking. And you might have heard of this guy before. He creates the Dilbert comic strip, which is a very popular syndicated comic. The book is called Win Bigly, Persuasion in a World Where Facts Don't Matter. And this book was initially written as a response to the 2016 U.S. election of Donald Trump. And in particular, the book goes on to explain how someone can seemingly come from behind and win while, you know, seemingly disregarding most of the facts and, you know, preferred conventions about American politics in general, I think we can say. But there are also other lessons that can come from this book, such as the fact that you can show two people the same set of information, the same facts, the same presentation, and they will see something completely different. And we've seen this numerous times in regards to RuneScape, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
RunePass is one of them. Various aspects of the mining and smithing rework design prior to its redesign, and most recently the CompCape rework. And anybody who is interested in communications, persuasion, and talking to people had ought to read this book. And, you know, if you read this, you will learn that many of the things I have alluded to in the past here on the podcast have been brought up on this book. Because after you read this, you will see the world differently when it comes to communications. And, you know, we talk a lot about Jagex's communications as well. And, you know, by extension, we're a branch of that, but you will see a different way of presenting information going forward after looking at this, so much so that one of the actual parts of this book is talking about how to use various elements of persuasion to better carry your argument forward. And yes, it does cite examples of what happened in the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign, but you can also take these same principles and apply them to anything. You can apply them to buying a car. You can apply them to interviews. You can apply them to RuneScape. And that's what we've been doing every so often on the podcast whenever something controversial comes up on the show. It's a different way of thinking. And I would recommend anybody who wants to have their mind shattered about the CompCape rework or anything in particular to read this book. I would also recommend any JMods listening to this podcast to also read this book as well, because it can provide some very useful insights for interacting with communities that are diverse and also, let's just say, seeing different things when the same information is also presented. So that's called Win Bigly, and you can find it on Amazon, you can find it on Kindle, you can find it on audiobook. It's a definite recommendation. So link is in the show notes to that.
Yep. You won't see things the same way, that's for sure.
Have you gone through it? Or?
Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, look, it's good for where we're at. For better or worse, this is where we're at, and if you want to understand why things are like this, it definitely helps.
Hey, it could probably also apply to Brexit as well for those living in the UK. So there's that too. So, you know, whether it's President Trump, Brexit, or a CompCape rework design, I think there's something in here we can all learn. So that's why it's pick of the week. And as I said, it's been batting around for a while. It took a while for us to get to the point where I knew we needed this. And I think after last week's show, and especially after this week's Q&A, it's time.
Yep.
So
that's for sure.
We could even potentially do a monthly bit on this at some point in the future as well. So,
but oh, we can definitely do one on – we can bring it in doing one on perception, you know, like – yeah.
All right. What have you been up to on RS?
Got 99 farming with Junior, and then switched his farm over to a breeding facility, to produce animals for beans, and, doing that. And then I've been doing a bunch of Dagonoff on my main for, Crimson Charms. So, like I said, I'm saving up, just building up kind of Iron Man style for next year's Game Blast and Double XP. There's going to be some big competitions I definitely want to get in, and I need to be prepared.
All right. Will one of those be our fire making competition?
You know, I don't know. I will do more now because 10 days is a way
right. That's something easy, I didn't way mention. Better each of these are only going to run for 10 days.
Yeah, that's so much better for me personally than a month. So yeah, probably. I don't know if it'll be the fire making. Probably get into some Slayer though. I would totally be down to do that. Yeah.
Alrighty. As for me this week on RS, you know, just still capitalizing on those incense sticks. The Lantadimi ones have crashed to below market, but the Spirit Weed and Quorum ones that David mentioned last week on the show are still pretty good. So it makes sense to farm those herbs and grow them yourself and reap the benefits from that. You know, some of these sticks are market value 8K. They're selling for like 21K each, just to give you an idea. So.
Oh, wow. Even so it's even worth it to grow Guam?
I don't know about Guam. Those ones who were that high were the Spirit Weed and Quorum.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, if you have Spirit Weed and Quorum, you might as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And, you know, another thing that someone might want to look into profit-wise is Magic Note Paper and Impious Ashes in the new dungeon, the new resource dungeon.
Oh.
What because those are selling above market, too.
What's dropping Impious Ashes in the new dungeon?
There's imps down there.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Forgot about the old imps.
Yeah. Or you could go kill the pyre fan somewhere, but, I mean, there's lots of imps down there, too, right? So.
Yeah, no, that's true. I never even thought about that.
Yep. But that's it for me. Not too much else to report. I think we can wrap this one up. So with that being said, if you guys want full show notes, update.rsbnb.com. We're also in Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, and on Twitter at RSBNB, where you'll find these articles, the show, and of course the nibbles posted throughout the week. So with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.